podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for downloading another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Once again, as we're still in lockdown, it's time for another episode of Dream 15, where we get a guest to come on and pick a fantasy 15 made up of their favourite players. And this week, it was an absolute blast. I had a really good chat with James Hook, who doesn't really need any introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. Of course, 80-odd caps for Wales, British and Irish Lions, Ospreys, Gloucester, Perpignan. Just a fantastic player. And do you know what? He was as much fun to chat to as he was to watch play. Had a fantastic time chatting to him. And it was a real good balance of him taking it seriously and having a really good laugh about it. So I honestly couldn't have enjoyed it anymore. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And if you have enjoyed this series generally, then please do leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us out massively. Got some more great ones lined up, recorded with Ross Harries last week, which is also fantastically good fun. That'll be coming out next week. Hoping to chat to Charlie Morgan, the journalist, this week. And maybe a few more players lined up too. So thanks to everyone who's contributed to this series. And also thanks to you guys for listening. One final thanks, of course, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some top quality coffee and support a young Welsh business, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, enjoy the show.
Midfield has plenty of forwards in it. Now it's more open for Wales. Jonathan Thomas outside James Hook. Wonderful run by James Hook. There's that handoff. There's the finish by Hook. Brilliant. Great solo try, James Hook.
Welcome to another edition of Dream 15 by the Attacking Scrum. And I'm delighted to say we've got a fantastic guest lined up for you this evening. Over the past few weeks, we've had journalists, we've had bloggers, we've had fans like me and Dan do it. And actually, we've got someone who's been picked in the Dream 15 already. It's my delight to say I'm joined by James Hook. How are you doing, James?
How are you, Jed? You okay, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I didn't realise I was picked in the Dream 15. Who picked that?
Yeah, this is it. Do you know what? I can't remember now. I think I've done about 7 or 8 of them. You're the first person to come on as a guest who's actually made it into one of the teams as well. I don't maybe Sean Connor. I don't know. I'll have to think back and go over that. first question though, how have you found this? Has this been a difficult process?
I'm fine at the same time. You're flipping it. There's so many quality players, and I didn't know where to start, to be honest, Jed. But I've got some names written down, and I'm sure whichever 15 I've picked, they'll do a job.
Oh well, we're looking forward to it. Well, let's start with the area that you know the most about, and that's in the front row. let's crack straight on with the number one shirt. Who've you gone for, and who was in the running for Loosehead Prop?
Right. Well, before I start, I want to say I haven't selected any Welsh in my squad just because.
Wow.
I thought, yeah, I just wanted to go. Just, I don't know. I suppose once I start picking one Welshman, I don't know, it gets a bit political then, doesn't it? So I thought, right, there's plenty of other good players out there. So I'll scour the globe and see what I can come up with. So
I like that. Yeah.
But I will obviously mention a couple of the Welsh players in those positions. So obviously talking about,
of course,
number one, obviously Gethin Jenkins springs to mind straight away. But I thought about Os Durant, which is a player, you know, he's a legend during the 1997 Lions tour to South Africa. I think he was the one that Scott Gibbs actually bounced off, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Gibbs ran over him, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But obviously that wasn't his greatest moment, but he was a great player and a huge bloke, I always remember. But the person I've actually gone with is the beast, the South African Loosehead.
Oh,
how do you pronounce his name? Do you know, Jed?
Tendai Mutamawira, I think.
That's the one. We'll
call him the beast. For the purposes of this, let's call him the beast, yeah.
Yeah, I just like that. Obviously, I'll announce my venue later on. I like the sound, the thought of the crowd chanting his name in the venue I picked, so.
Oh well, we look forward to hearing more about that as well. But yeah, God, what a player! And you know, a long, you know, a pretty long career as well, almost as long as yours, Hooky.
Yeah. How long have you played for South Africa? I know he's been around a while. He's about 34 now, isn't he? So he's...
So you'd have been there in that Lions series in 2009, of course, and then yeah, you know, was a part of the World Cup squad as well, which is, you know, pretty good going in the thick of it in the front row.
Yeah, I think you have about 117 tests, something like that. I think yes.
Amazing.
So yeah, amazing. He's my number one anyway, but yeah, great player.
How we've got to ask you this as well. You know, obviously playing those positions in the backs that you played, you know, 10 and in the centre and stuff. How important is it for you to have a good pack of forwards in front of you? You know, for us mere mortals who've never played professional rugby, how much of a difference does it make when you've got that front football and you've got the back football?
Oh, well, huge difference. I think if it can determine the whole game, can it? I think, you know, obviously, I played in France for 3 years, and one of the big sayings was no scrum, no play. And basically, you know, if your scrum's going backwards, you can train all week and practice all the moves you like. But if you're not getting good front football or any ball at all, then you're struggling. So, yeah, it makes a huge difference. And obviously, it starts up front with the front row in particular. So, if they can keep our scrum steady, we're laughing. There's no to laugh.
Well, I think, yeah, you definitely have someone keeping the front row steady in the beast. What about number two? Who was in the running for Hooker?
Right, well, I've gone for Shark Brits. Another Springbok, actually. But I've played against him a lot of times. I've played with him for the Barbarians. And away from rugby, he's a fantastic bloke, really positive guy. And I just think, as a player, there's not many forwards, particularly front row forwards, that could probably do a job at international rugby in the backs, and he is one of those. So I think we played against Saracens for Gloucester, and I think they did it, you know, towards the end of his career, so it says a lot about him. But they put him in the backfield to gather kicks to counter-attack back. So, you know, he's asking a hooker to do that. That shows a lot about him.
It does. And you know, he's one of those players who, as a fan, he's so much fun to watch because he plays like it's, you know, he looks like he's having so much fun when he's playing. Was that kind of, was that what it was like when you're playing with the Barbarians and when you're playing against him? Is, you know, does he look like he's having, you know, is he having as much fun as he looks like he's having?
Yeah, definitely. He's got a heck of a step on him as well for a hooker. But yeah, I think every game he played, whether it's for Saracens, for South Africa, he pretty much played like a Barbarians player anyway, didn't he? So yeah, great player. Another hooker who I used to like growing up watching was Keith Wood. You know, great, sort of elusive hooker as well. But you know, and obviously you've got Richard Hibbard as the Welsh hooker who I played with a lot and grown up with, and but he's a different type of hooker. But as we're not picking any Welsh, I've gone for Shark Brits.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. I think the other thing that we found with this, getting people on to kind of pick their Dream 15, is some players, you know, like I picked a lot of players who I watched growing up, and then we've had other guys on who have gone for players, you know, when they're a bit older. And when we had Sean Connor on, Sean went for a lot of players from his era when he was playing. Did you find it was easier to pick players who you played with and against, or was it more of the players you saw when you were growing up watching rugby?
Yeah, I think it is easier because you get a bit more perspective on the player and you know a little bit more about them as well. But I think, you know, there's obviously standout players like Keith Wood. Obviously, I never played with Keith Wood, but, you know, he was a hooker that stood out to me again around, you know, the 90s growing up watching international rugby. But yeah, I think as a player, it is easier because you're involved, you're playing against these players, you're watching them week in, week out, where perhaps the older sort of generation, you know, particularly the 80s, you know, you just rely on highlight reels and videos and things. So
Oh, that's an interesting one. But yeah, Shark Brits, great pick, and a lot of fun to watch. What about tight end? Who's in the running here?
Tight end, well, like you say, Jed, it's not really my strong point, the front row. So I've obviously Owen Franks is a legend of the game, New Zealand tight end, but I've gone with Nicolas Mas, the French tight end.
Yeah.
I played with him in Perpignan. and just what a competitor. He was our captain. Again, another great bloke, but a guy who could pull a team together so easily. I had the respect of the whole team, and I actually remember before our games in Perpignan, we used to obviously huddle up, but before we had a team huddle, we have the backs have a little chat first, then the forwards, then we'd all come together. And I remember is when Luke Chartless was over in Perpignan at the time, and obviously he's about 6'12" charts, isn't he? And I remember Nicola Massey, he's not the tallest of blokes, but he's screaming and shouting at his forwards as most French forwards do to each other. But he ends up going around each forward and just sort of sticking the head in every forward and trying to get him revved up. So, as I say, because he's so short and Luke Chartless is so tall, Luke Chartless had to bend down to allow Nicola Massey to stick the head in him. So it was a great sight to watch, and didn't really prepare me in the way I wanted to before a game, but it was good fun to watch.
It must be like a giraffe bending down to get a ticket off from a rhino or something.
It was exactly like that, yeah. But I think that shows the respect that Luke Chartless actually bent down for him to get headbutted. So,
oh, I like that, yeah. And I tell you what, looking at this front row as well, I half wondered whether you were going to pick being a silky back and outside half, James. I wondered whether you were going to go for real offload. All players like Shark Brits, all offloading players. But you got two really demon scrummages either side of him, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to what you were just saying about that balance, isn't it? Obviously my backs will show a bit of flair now when I come to that, but they've got to have the platform to play as well.
Nice work. Well, yeah, for a pretty formidable front row we've got. Let's move on into the engine room. I'm looking forward to you explaining how you're not picking Alwyn Jones.
I know. I might have to sneak him in here now. I have to go against my word here now. No, I've gone, so my choice is at number four. Again, so many quality second rows, but you've got obviously Martin Johnson, John Eales, which was someone, well, both those players growing up, I watched and didn't play against any of those, but obviously quality players in their own right. But I've gone for Backy's Bota. I don't know if he's come up at all in your dream teams.
Oh, he's come up. I mean, just quickly on John Eales, I picked John Eales and I decided I want him to be my goal kicker as well, just because I thought, there's something amazing about having a number four taking goal kicks in a World Cup final. But Backy's Bota has come up because he's just, just sheer force and just like an animal. Yeah, I mean, you must have played against Backy's a few times as well, right?
Yeah, and obviously Wales against South Africa. But I remember him on the Lions in 2009. And there's just, obviously, he's a great player. But I just remember the size of the bloke, like you just said, just walking past him. It's like, you're thinking, how the heck am I going to tackle this bloke? He's a machine. And he hit rucks 100 mile an hour. He just flew into someone, and when he hit someone, they stayed it. So he's a good player to watch. Not so great to play against, but he gets my nod in second row, number four.
We're definitely going to touch on that 2009 tour a bit more as this podcast goes on, because me and my mates were fascinated by that tour, because we were, I think it was the height of how much we loved rugby in 2009. We were so into it, and the DVD that came out afterwards gave you this kind of insight into what it was like. But I'm surprised to say, because obviously you were on that tour as a Lion, and you've in the front five, or the four players we've named, you picked three Springboks already.
Yeah. I'm looking through my team now. I think that's about it as well. So in terms of Springbok, oh no, there's one more which I'll come to. But I just realised how many there are actually in there. But the show goes to show how many quality Springboks there's been over the years.
Oh, it does. I'm going to ask you a bit about that tour then now, actually, while it's front of mind. Because, again, for us as fans, it felt like after the disaster of 2005 and how disappointed everyone was after that, it almost felt like the 2009 tour, although the Lions didn't get the win, it was the tour that kind of saved the Lions as a thing,
Because
they played so well.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously narrowly missing out in the second test, which... obviously would have set it all up for the decider, but I think what it did was, the fans that travelled out there, they saw some great rugby, not just in the tests but in the games leading up, and I think obviously winning that final test as well made it, you know, a great tour. Like you say, even though we didn't win the test series, there's so much happened in every single game that, you know, gets people talking.
And I seem to remember talking about the games leading up to the test. There was a midweek game that you played in. I can't think who it was against now, but there was definitely an occasion where you got hit and it looked like you stayed hit. There must be some mean bastards out there in those midweek games.
Oh, there was, Jed. I remember that game was the Southern Kings. I think it was in Port Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think it might have been, yeah.
And it was that, I remember it because it was the first game in the brand new stadium. Lovely stadium, and they just came out and they came out to hurt us and injure us, because the week after was the first test. I started at 10, and I remember making like a half break, and I can't remember where it was, came across and just forearmed me straight in the chin, and that's pretty much all I can remember. I got back up, I got seen by the physio, and I've only saw this footage on the Lions DVD where, you know, the doctors come on, physios come on, and I obviously told them, you know, I was okay and it was fine, and then I got back up and Mike Blair was a scrum half at the time, and he asked me, we had a scrum, he asked me you know, for the call, and I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue. I couldn't think of any calls, and obviously as a 9 and 10, you know, you're the dictators, you organise everything, and I was like, I don't know, mate. I haven't got a clue. I was like, and I knew then, you know, I thought, flip, mate, this is not good, you know. So I played on for, I don't know, 30 seconds, a minute, and I came off in first half, which I was gutted about because obviously the first test was coming up, and I felt that, you know, I'd played really well on the tour, and I was putting myself in the picture for it. But they pulled me out of contention then for that first test. But brutal game.
Watching those DVDs, you know, again, like I say, you know, me and my mates here, we love to watch them after a few beers and stuff like that. What's it like watching it back as a player? You know, it must be such a different experience when you've actually been there and in the camp and you're kind of reliving it again. I almost think like you wouldn't want to watch it as a player.
I enjoy watching it. And I actually watched that tour. He was on Sky Sports, I think, last summer. They put the whole sort of documentary on, and that was really enjoyable. I think, you know, some great memories, like we've just spoken about from there. And, you know, I always remember, again, as a young boy growing up, watching the Living with the Lions, you know, the original Living with the Lions DVD or VHS, as it was back then. And, you know, you won't get better than that, you know, as much as you try. It's, you know, combination of the old school players and the way they used to do it back in the days. One of the best documentaries still to this day.
Yeah, it takes some beating. Right then, who's going to be alongside Backes Bota in the second row?
Well, as we're on that sort of subject, I've gone for Paul O'Connell, who, again, speaking about on that tour, and, you know, he's obviously a different type of player to Backes Bota, probably not as physical, but I just remember, obviously played against him before that tour a lot, but just the way you can just, when he's speaking to a group of players or to his team or to someone in the public or in a function, the way he gets the room to listen to him and everyone's just intrigued about what he says, you know, it didn't really matter what he said because the whole room or the whole group of boys are just listening to him and hanging on every word. And I think that's what he wants from a captain. And, you know, when I left that tour, I had huge, huge respect for him. Obviously, before I went on, I had huge respect for him, but leaving, you know, massive respect.
Yeah, do you know, again, it's one of those things that it comes across on those DVDs, doesn't it? You just see, you can kind of almost see the look in the eyes of the players as he's speaking. When he stands up and says something, it's not for the sake of wanting to say something. Everyone there is going to listen and take what he's saying on board.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And again, another really, really genuine, nice guy. I bumped into him in one of the Six Nations games, obviously before, you know, the lockdown and everything started. And just what a lovely, lovely bloke, and great player to go with it.
Oh wow, this pack is taking shape, and there's a lot of mean individuals in it. I'm liking the look of this so far. Let's move on to the back row then, and we always talk about balance in the back row. This is one of the cliches we always talk about on the podcast. Is that what you've gone for? Have you gone for the kind of the fetcher, the chopper, and the big ball carrier? What's the balance of James Hook's back row?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a bit like that. So, well, should we start with six, should we?
Go for it.
We start with number... So, the options I had was Kieran Reid, for obvious reasons, unbelievable player, and I think he's a 100 capper, I think, is he?
Yeah, I think he is, and I have this obsession. I've mentioned this a few times on the pod, but like, you know, I mean, as you know, right, you got 81, 82 caps for Wales.
81,
right?
That's
81 caps. That's, you know, that's an amazing achievement. And then you think how amazing, the amazing depth of talent there is in New Zealand. Mm. Think how good you've got to be to get 100 caps for New Zealand, in those positions.
Ridiculous. I don't know how many there are in New Zealand have got 100 caps. Obviously, Dan Carter did, didn't he? Richie McCaw. Did Owen Franks? There's not a lot of 100 cap All Blacks, is it?
No, I'm googling it as we speak.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, it was only probably a handful, and flip the neck. If you get 100 caps for All Blacks, you know, you get 10 caps for the All Blacks. You know, you're something special. But it shows what an incredible player he is. But I haven't picked him a six. Mm. I've gone for Khaleesi. Captain. I don't know if he's come up in any of the dream teams.
He's not the first person to mention him, actually.
Yeah, I thought, because obviously he's current, he's the present current captain at the moment. But I just think watching that World Cup, you know, I had so much respect for him. Never played against him. Don't know the bloke, but you can just see, you know, the amount of respect he's got from his players and supporters, and not just the South African players and supporters, the whole of the world, you know, after that World Cup.
Yeah, and do you know what? There's something quite special about it, because I think if you would know this better than me, but a lot of people kind of watching, you'd look at that back row in South Africa, and again, there's so much strength in depth. You know, you've got Peter Steph de Toit, who's just an animal.
Yeah.
You've got Francois Lowe in the mix. Who's the eight? I can't even remember now. But you'd almost look at it and say, actually, Siya Khaleesi as a player, you know, is he good enough to even get in that back row? But you have to pick him because he's like this. It seems like he's the glue that holds that side together.
Yeah, he is. So, like you say, there's so many other quality sixes in the world. But I thought I'm gonna put him in.
Oh, great choice. I like that a lot. What about open side then?
Right. Well, again, you've got the obvious Richie McCaw, and on another day you get in this team. But the seven I've gone for is I've gone for George Smith. And
nice.
Again, you know, an unbelievable career. I don't know. He's still going now, isn't he? And I don't know when his first cap was, but he has been around so long, and to be around so long and, you know, put the performances in that he has done. And I've played against him for Gloucester against Wasps. And it's actually a story where I think it was my second season where he got sighted because I just made a tackle and he'd sort of come in to sort of enter the ruck, and I was on the edge of the ruck, and he caught me with his sort of shin/knee in the side of the head. And to be honest with you, I sort of didn't realise it was him or what really happened. So I brushed it off, got on with the game. And I had a message from Bradley Davis, the Welsh second row, saying, George Smith, you know, I've sent him your number. He wants to message you. He's been sighted for something. And I didn't realise he'd been sighted for that. So he wanted to see if I'd give him a reference, you know, because he didn't think it was that bad. And, you know, it wasn't really that bad because, you know, I didn't really notice it that much. But like you say, the sighting commissioner picked it up. So I wrote him, I looked at the video back then and just said, you know, it was something, nothing. I think Wasps had a big game the following week. So Dai Young obviously wanted George Smith fit, and he didn't want to, and ready to play because he didn't want to lose him. So I wrote him a good reference, and he got off it, which meant he could play the next game. And I just, he said, oh, thanks very much. Sent me, you know, nice message. And I said, oh, no problem. Just, you know, buy me a drink. Buy me, I think I said something like a vodka Red Bull or something when I see you next. And about a week later, I turned up to King's Home. We had a training session in King's Home, and he sent me a big limited edition bottle of Grey Goose. So I'll always remember that. So that was really nice of him. So he didn't just buy me one drink. He bought me a big bottle of Grey Goose.
Oh, nice touch. I like that a lot. It's, on the rugby side of things. So like you say, like you played for so long, and you played tests against the Lions 12 years apart. And that's just amazing, isn't it? You know, he was there in that 01 series. And then I'm fairly certain, off the top of my head, he featured in the 2013 series. Like, you think how much rugby changed between 01 and 13. And he was so good, he could play international rugby at that time.
Yeah, crazy. And like you say, for such a physical position as well, you know, his body must be battered, you know. But you look at him, he still looks in great nick and, you know, in good physical condition. So, yes, it's a credit to him.
Yeah, we were saying this with someone else the other week about Thierry Douzetoir. Like, yeah, you know, he played so many games for France at the highest level. There's barely a scratch on him. You know, like, it's like, you know, if you look at Joe Calzaghe, you know, you'd never say that Joe Calzaghe fought and won 49 professional fights, because it doesn't look like there's a scratch on him. And I think there must be something about those about some of these back row forwards that they just kind of know how to dip in and out, like Calzaghe dips in and out with the jab.
Yeah, it's probably a lot to be said for that, actually, isn't it? You know, on the technique and the way they do things. So yeah, he's definitely one of those, isn't he?
George Smith, great choice. What about number eight then?
Number eight, right, okay. So I've gone for, I thought about Zinzan Brook. And again, you talk about John Eales with goal kicking and things like that. Well, Zinzan Brook, you always remember his drop goal, wasn't it?
That was against England, the 95 semi, the game where Lomu steamrolled with Mike Catt. That was that same game.
That's it, yeah, that's it. And yeah, you always remember that. That's all always on his highlight reel. But I've gone for Philo Tiatia at number eight.
Oh, you're not the first Osprey we've had on here to mention him. We've had Kai on a couple of times, and Kai always says he was like, of all those Galacticos who were in the squad at the time, he says that one of the most important players in that team was Philo.
Yeah, he was. And I think when obviously the internationals were away, he was one of the players, along with obviously Marty Haller, Justin Marshall, Stefan Tablanche. These boys were there all year round. And but he was a phenomenal player. What a player. What a team player. And he was almost like a coach as well at the same time. So he'd be training and coaching the boys out there. And just everything. He never had a bad game. And you could tell the opposition feared him every time they were on the pitch against him. He was such a presence.
What was he like to train with? Is he one of them again who, you know, in a training setup, is he taking it 60%, or is he flying in thinking, oh, I'm going to take a piece out of Hookie in his defence drills?
I think that's what, funny enough, I was speaking about this. I can't remember who I was speaking about it to, one of my mates, and they were saying about players like Philo, like Jerry Collins, these big, you know, players who could, in training, smash lumps out of you if they wanted to. They could end you every single session. But, you know, they were players who, in training, just contained themselves. They knew it was almost laughable. They could end you if they wanted to, but you know, they had the respect for you, and you know, they knew they just emptied the tank on the weekend. And I think technically he was up there with the best, you know, his breakdown skills, and everyone knows about how strong he was, his running ability, his defending. But yeah, I think all round great player.
Well, do you know, he is an all-round great player in a pretty formidable-looking pack. So just as we head into the break, let's quickly recap on James Hook's Dream 15 pack. We've got the Beast at loosehead, Schalk Britz at hooker, Nicola Mass at tighthead, Bakis Bota and Paul O'Connell in the second row. And then in the back row, we've got at number eight, Philo Tiatia, George Smith at open side, and Sia Kalise at blindside. That's a pretty good pack. And you said you had a lot of options. Now you've added that red out to you. You still happy with those as your picks?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I've named it now, so I can't go back.
There's no turning back. And we're going to find out who will be joining them in the backs. And we're going to do that after this very, very short break.
I'm Sam Warburton, and you're listening to The Attacking Scrum.
Time now then, James Hook, for you to choose where I think you've spent most of your time, which is choosing the backs. And I suppose it's a very, very important one here at number nine. You must have, you know, you must have played with some amazing nines throughout your career. But who's kind of in contention for this fantasy 15?
Yeah, well, I think the ones you've, you know, you mentioned I played with, you know, Mike Phillips, Dwayne Peel, Justin Marshall, you know, these scrum halves are world-class scrum halves. But yeah, Justin Marshall, obviously not picking any Welsh, came into contention. Gareth Edwards as well, you know, he's obviously going back into, you know, the 70s, 80s, but, you know, he's got to be up there with one of the greatest scrum halves that have ever played the game. So, he, you know, they came into contention. But do you know what I said earlier about no more Springboks? There was one more, and this is him. I'm sorry about this, but it's Soos van der Westhuizen.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if he's come up in the options, but what a player growing up. Like, again, around that World Cup 95 World Cup.
Yeah.
I always remember the tackle he put on Lomu when, you know, obviously all the chat was about Lomu in the World Cup. And how are we going to bring him down, especially in the World Cup final? And I remember he put a big tackle on Lomu, was steaming into him, and then he put him into touch, and there was a bit of a scuffle. And he was like, right, he was in for the game, yeah.
I mean, he's again, I remember watching him growing up, and he was just seemed to have absolutely everything in his game, because it's at a time when you could be forgiven if you were a scrum half who, you know, who missed tackles or was brushed off. And
yeah,
he never did. You know, he was, like you say, he was putting in hits on Lomu, who was a man that was bundling through blindside flankers for fun.
Yeah.
But alongside that, he had a great snipe. His service was good. He had a good kicking game. In many ways, was like he was years ahead of his time.
He was, and I got another story. One probably the reason that tipped me to put him in the team was I think it was 2000 or 2001. We went on a college tour, Neath College tour to South Africa, and we went South Africa. We're playing Australia. In Cape Town. So the Thursday, I think it was, we went to watch South Africa train. We took the college bus down, and I thought, you know, we'd be miles away from the team. We'd never get a chance to see them. And we got there, and there was like a college sort of training ground. And we were right up close to the South African team. So the forwards and backs split, and the forwards for the college, as you do when I watch the forwards, the backs when I watch the backs, and they were doing some set piece plays off scrum. And I loved Van der Westhuizen at the time. So I used to play scrum half up until the age of 17. So he was one of the scrum halves I used to love watching. And I just shouted across to him, just, Joost, you know, just to sort of maybe get a wave or something like that. And he did wave to me. He asked me how I was, and he called me onto the training pitch to play number eight for him, like, you know, so as if you do like an 8-9 sort of move. And I fed him the ball, and I was looking in the back line, and at the time they had like Louis Kuhn at outside half, Brent Russell at fullback, and I was like, this is one of the best days of my life.
That's absolutely amazing. I mean, yeah. Again, like, what age did you say you were, 16, 17?
So I was in Neath College, so I was, yeah, 17, maybe going on 18. Yeah, 17 would have been.
Oh, it must have been, yeah, one of those kind of pinch yourself moments at that age. I've got to ask you, though, at that stage, you know, obviously, you know, you'd have played a lot of age grade rugby, and you know, been starting to kind of find your feet at various levels. Did you think at that stage, you know, you'd go on and play for Wales?
At that stage, no, not at all, because I played scrum half until about that age. Really, it was when I went to Neath College, and I was playing sort of youth rugby. I'd moved from 9 to 10, so. I wasn't thinking. I was pretty much thinking about getting in the college team. You know, at that time as well, I scraped in the Wales under-18s team the sort of end of that year. But, you know, I didn't really feel I was, you know, pushing for, you know, the Wales schoolboys was the best Welsh team of that age, and I was probably nowhere near that. So, no, I didn't expect to, you know, get the career I did in the end.
So yeah, it's absolutely amazing. It's brilliant hearing that story from out in South Africa. Let's get onto the number 10 position. Were you tempted to pick yourself here?
Yeah, I was tempted, but there's no Welsh chat, is it?
And not even yourself. Fair enough. I like that, mate. I like that. You're a man of principle.
But obviously there's a lot of options here, and I thought about Wilkinson. Obviously, you know, the obviously goal kicking, defending, that just obviously a world class player for different reasons too. Probably the other options I've got, Dan Carter, probably the most complete 10 in the world. I thought about Jiffy as well, Jonathan Davis, because recently during this lockdown, you've seen some of the highlights and stuff, and obviously it's things I've seen before, but just hits home a little bit, just how good he was, you know, in league and union. Phil Bennett obviously sprung to mind. But the one I've gone for is Thomas Castanier.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I just remember with Castanier, I think it was Wales, France, 99, I think it was. I might have got my dates wrong here, but when he just run riot against Wales, and just basically everything he touched, you know, sort of turned to gold, and he was sort of flamboyant 10, could pretty much do everything. Wasn't the biggest player in the world, but I'd like to see him in this team and see how he goes behind the good pack.
Yeah, I think it might have been 98, actually. I think 99 was the year we got a win out there.
That's why I was thinking 99 then, yeah.
Yeah, and 98 was, might have been at Wembley, actually. I think it might have been one of the games at Wembley, and he absolutely, yeah, I remember the game now. It was like, yeah, they won by 40, 50 points. He was just superb.
Yeah, he was. He was a hell of a player, wasn't he?
Was, were there players you watched growing up who you thought, right, you know, I want to play like him? And obviously you said, you know, you're kind of playing nine at the time, but did you ever look at other players and thought, you know, that's who I want to model my game on, or did you always want to kind of play it in your own way?
I think as a kid growing up, particularly looking at players in your position, so 10, for example, for me, you know, you look at players like Castanier or Jiffy, like I mentioned, for example, or players like this who can do things and make you stand up and say, wow, you know. But I think it's when you get older, and obviously, you know, I play in these positions then professionally, you realise, you know, how good Wilkinson is. Dan Carter, obviously, is what would be a complete player, because he could do all those things that probably Castanier could do. But he could control a game unbelievably well as well. And, you know, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, again, he doesn't do great things all the time, but he just seems to do the right thing all of the time.
So that's an interesting point. But yeah, nice blend of halfbacks there. You know, you got that kind of that grit and steel of Van der Vesthuizen and the real Silky Castanier. I'd like that a lot. Right, let's have a look at the wingers.
So the wingers, I've gone, do you know what, for number 11, there wasn't really any other options I thought of other than John Olomou. I was thinking, of how can you pick a dream 15? I know I've probably picked, you know, a couple outside the box so far, but John Olomou, again, during that, you know, sort of 90s, 95 World Cup when he came onto the scene, you know, he reminded me actually of when you watch football and you watch when Wayne Rooney came onto the scene, and when he was 16 years old, you just wanted to see him with the ball, because you knew every time he was going to get the ball, something was going to happen. Whether it was, you know, it was a great pass, a great shot, a great goal, whatever it is, and you felt that with Longmore every time you got the ball. And yeah, that's the reason I've picked him.
Do you know, I think we're similar age, James, and I remember watching watching that World Cup, and I think it was the first game New Zealand played was against Ireland, and I was watching it in my nan's back bedroom in Newport, and I'd never seen anything like it, because you didn't have wingers that big in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, there was no one like him. Well, in fact, anywhere in the world game, there was no one 6'6" who could run the 100 meters in, you know, in just over 10 seconds. It was just, it almost felt like it was unfair. The closest I'd seen was, you know, was playing in a school game where you know, there's some kid who's 12 years old, but he's already got a beard and he's able to run through all the other kids. It made it look that easy.
It's exactly how it is, isn't it? And it'd be interesting to see, you know, if you put the 95 Lomu in the modern game now, how he'd fare. Do you think he'd still have the same impact? I don't know.
I honestly think, right, if there was, because it is so hard to compare generations, yeah. And I think there's very few players, you know, like, you know, I think even someone like Phil Bennett would find it hard with defences as organised as yeah. they are now. But someone like Lomu, it is absolute peak. If he was able to train, you know, the way that you boys train now, just think how much better he would be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, with that conditioning. Yeah, I think there's a couple who would be able to do it. I think he would be one. And I think one of the other ones you mentioned was Gareth Edwards. His natural skill. You think the ball that he's chucking around is, you know, weighs like 4 stone when it's soaking wet.
Yeah.
You know, those big old leather balls, and they're like a bar of soap when it's wet as well. I've only seen the highlights reels of Gareth Edwards, but everyone you speak to who played with or against him tells you that his natural skills were just insanely high.
Yeah, you could see that a mile off, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And I think on the topic of Lomu, was still the best computer game ever, John Lomu rugby. And me and the kit man and the Ospreys now, he's got a little TV, a little 30-inch TV in his kit room with Lomu. So every little break and training,
brilliant.
We go up there and we've got like a little cardboard box where all the kit is kept, and we've got just a little biro pen. And there must be, honest to God, there's about 50 or 60 games, and we write the scores down and the man of the match in the game. And we've got a copy of that now. So that happens all the time. Still the best game ever.
Mate, that is absolutely superb. I love the fact you did. Again, I lost large periods of my childhood that I should have been spent doing homework or whatever. I was sneaking off to play John Lomu rugby because it was just it was for the time quite an accurate representation of rugby. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was also just so easy to play. It was just pure fun. They're never going to beat it. Rugby's too complicated a game, I think, to make a good.
Yeah, I haven't seen a game even come close to it since that game.
Well, we played. We did mention this with Ben James from Wales Online when he came on.
Yeah,
and we picked. We had a chat about Rugby 06. Now, Rugby 06, you were probably busy being an actual professional rugby player at this point, but people like me and Ben were tucked away in the bedroom playing you know, the video games, and that one was good, to be fair.
Right,
that one was good. So. Yeah, if anyone could replicate either one of those games in the modern era, mate, I think they'd be onto a winner.
Yeah, I'll take your word for that then, Jed. And I might take a bit of convincing, mind.
I think you're on one of them. You would be on Rugby 07 or Rugby 08. Or
I'm going with John along with then. It's steady on, flip my neck.
What about the other wing, James?
Right, so the other wing, again, a lot of options. I thought about Jason Robinson. I just again, was it the Lions?
Lions in 2001, he was just sensational.
2001, yeah, unbelievable. That first try he scored in the first test, he's just electric. And he's just missed out. Kaukau and Buka again, another one who I just remember watching him with the Super 40 or Super, maybe in Super 12 then when he was there, was it?
Yeah. I think he probably did both. He would probably have been there for a bit of the Super 12 and a bit of the 14, I think.
Yeah, so I just remember some of the unbelievable tries he scored. Thought about Cheslin Colby as well, who, you know, just watching him in the modern game, and I think we just spoke about defences, how tight they are and how good they are. When you've got a player like that who can just make quality defences, world-class defences look ordinary, you know, he's some player. So he was an option, but didn't make it. Thought about Campese for obvious reasons as well, but I've gone with Radradra.
You've got some serious muscle on the wings here.
I have, yeah. Just going to just sit on Castanier's shoulder and they'll do the rest.
Is that what you liked in a winger? Did you like to have a big winger? Because again, you'd have played with a few, you know, obviously, you'd have played with George North at currently at the Ospreys and with Wales and stuff. Did you like a player to come in off the wing and take a pop pass? But you know, you'd obviously played with the likes of Shane as well. Yeah. Were very, very different.
Yeah, definitely. And that obviously with Shane on the wing, there was a good balance. We talked about George North, and I always remember Nicky Walker as well when I first stint in the Ospreys. just used to have a move called the creature, where basically we just bring him in off the wing from a scrum, and we just give him the ball and have the 12 coming short off him, and you know, more often than not, he didn't pass. He just runs straight over the top of the 10, and we get, you know, front foot ball immediately. So the reason we call him Creature actually was because I think a Scottish commentator, when he was playing for Scotland once, as he was carrying the ball, he just said, "Nicky Walker, what a creature!" And it just stuck in the Ospreys ever since. So that's the reason for that.
I like that. But you've gone for Sammy Rundrum there. What gave him the nod over all those other players?
I think it was the last World Cup. I think in particular his performances, obviously before that, is, you know, his performances for his club, but I think against Wales, where, you know, you just felt the big players needed a stand up, you know, if they were going to beat Wales, and obviously I know they didn't beat them, but he went a long way and tried his best to you know, to pretty much win that game on his own for Fiji. So again, another one like Longwood, probably not as much as Longwood did back in the day, but somebody, when he had the ball, you knew just something was going to happen. You didn't know what, but something was going to happen that was worth watching.
Yeah, the players that keep you on the edge of the seat.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
Right, what about centres then?
Right, so at number 12, I thought about Manonu, who's, you know, obviously for obvious reasons, again, someone who developed his game as well. He was just a sort of a straight up and down centre, wasn't he? Yeah. You know, was amazing at that, by the way. But he was someone who, over time, developed his game, brought a kicking game, his passing game come on. So he adapted as the game did, which is obviously great to see. I thought about Tuilagi playing at 12. Tim Horan as well.
Oh yeah, bit of proper footballer.
Yeah, silky. But I think probably a lot of that's down to how well I play with him on Longwood rugby. So I don't know. I think I'm gonna go a bit carried away. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to pick. Jason Little outside him, and Ryder outside him.
Yeah, they come as a pack, isn't he? But the person I went sort of 12 was Conte Pomi.
Oh yeah, what a great player he was! I think you're the first person to mention Conte Pomi, actually.
Am I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just again love the way he played. You know, he's completely different to Nonu, and especially Tuilagi. You know, he wasn't the type of player who'd truck it up for you, but skills, ridiculous skills. And again, I remember playing against him in my second cap for Wales against Argentina. And again, what a lovely bloke. I think, I know he gave me after the game, because he knew it was my first tour for Wales, he gave me his jersey. I wanted to swap it and was going to give him my jersey. And he was like, no, it's your first tour. You keep the kit. It was my jersey. You know, it was, you know, great to play against you and all that. And, you know, built a bit of a friendship up with him, really, as we played against Leinster a heck of a lot. And he was playing for Leinster at the time. So, yeah, great bloke and a great player.
Oh, what a classy touch. I like that a lot. What a great fella. Who's going to partner Conte Pomi in the centres?
Oh, again, it was a lot of options, but I couldn't look past O'Driscoll. I think as an outside centre, he is a complete 13. Even now, he just had everything. I think, you know, his outside break, his pace, for not even a really big bloke, defensively, punched way above his weight.
He turns ball over like a flanker, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know, but he makes the hits first, then he turns the ball over. But it's just his intelligence and his defensive reads, you know, were quality. So yeah, I think, you know, again, played with him, played against him, and you can just see, you know, it's all there to see how good he is.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. It's one of those players who as a fan, I never warmed to, but that's probably a testament to how good he was. Do you know what I mean? I was forever watching, you know, him boss it for Leinster or boss it for Ireland. And that's because he's just that good. You know, I think he is the best Northern Hemisphere 13 that I've ever seen, and it's because of that. Like you say, he's got everything in his locker.
Yeah, definitely. Who did you go for 13, Jed?
God, you're asking me now, mate. We're going back about 8 weeks. Oh no, I tell you, I went for. We had. I went. I wanted to see Gibbs and Bateman play once more together. So I went for Gibbs at 12 and Bateman at 13.
Quality.
Because I just feel like if that had been, if those boys hadn't gone off and played league, if they played Union together in the centre for, you know, for a decade, I just think that would have been, it would have been very different. It'd have been very different being a Welshman growing up in England in the 90s, mate. I tell you that. Right. There is one place left in your side, James. So this is your last chance to pick yourself at 15 if you want to.
Oh, go on then. Go on then, I will. No, I like, right. So I've got, again, so many options, but I thought about, I know I mentioned him earlier, Brent Russell. I remember, like I said, when I went to watch them training, we watched them play against Australia that game. And again, I can't remember the date. It was early 2000s and it was in Cape Town. So I could probably look back on that, but he was untouchable. You know, every time someone kicked in the ball, he was just making breaks for fun. And to be honest, I didn't really know a great deal about him before that game, but it certainly did after. So he came into contention. I thought about him, but I also thought about Christian Cullen.
Yeah. Who's,
just phenomenal. Remember him was, I think he played sort of his best rugby again around that sort of late 90s, wasn't it?
He did, yeah. I think, again, he's like, he must have the best YouTube reel out of any player from that era. Because it's not like he's scoring tries, you know, against Duff sides midweek. All his amazing tries are against Australia or South Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And full length of the pitch tries as well, aren't they? Some of them.
Yeah, pure class.
Yeah. So, but the person I've gone with, and I thought, well, I've gone sort of 90s and, you know, sort of 2000 players. So I've gone, you know, for, I think, Blanco, where, you know, he was back in the 80s, wasn't he? And I just thought, well, you hear so much about him, see so many clips about him. I just want to see what he's all about in this team.
Yeah, again, like a little bit before my time, but you speak to anyone who watched Serge Blanco play, and he was kind of the first, because he, you know, played in that first World Cup. He was almost the first superstar of the game, really.
Yeah, he was. What did I say? 80s? Was he 70s? He was, wasn't he?
No, Blanco was 80s. Yeah.
Yeah, 80s.
He would have been the bulk of his international career was in the 80s.
Yeah,
but yeah, just pure class. He's got a cafe in Biarritz, like a cafe bar in Biarritz, which I was on a stag do over there on the 2013 Lions, when the 2013 Lions tour was on there.
Yeah,
and all the lads went off surfing because it was Biarritz, and there was three of us. So I said, look, it was only a tour game, but I was like, the Lions were playing the Waratahs. I was like, no, let's skulk off. We'll sit down. We found this cafe, and it turned out it's Serge Blanco's, and it was a nice place to sit there, have a couple of beers, and try and recover from the night before.
Oh, nice.
He's an absolute hero in that part of the world.
He is. I remember actually meeting him once. The only time I met him was after we got knocked out of the Heineken Cup quarter final against Biarritz, and I think he's obviously something to do with the club there still. And he was in the aftermatch function, and I hardly recognise him because he's quite a big bloke now, isn't he? Yeah, he is. Yeah, but
yeah.
I remember actually having a photograph with him. I thought we'd lost the game, but I thought I'd get something positive out of this and have a photo of Blanco over here now.
Seeing as you brought it up, though, I've got to talk about that game. It's one of the most insane games of rugby I've ever seen. And I think that might be the only time in history. I mentioned this on a podcast the other day, but that must be the only time in history I've ever seen Shane Williams done for pace when Ngwenya went round him.
Yeah, I think he took everyone by surprise. Obviously, he certainly took Shane by surprise, but what unbelievable wheels, isn't it? And he just pretty much went straight, didn't he, for 100 metres. Yes. And he took us all by surprise. But I gutted. I never felt so gutted in my life after that game. Just because we got so close, and we were at a home semi-final draw if we had won. That was your best chance of winning Europe by a million miles.
I'll have to ask you this one as well. Sorry to bring it down a bit towards the end, but we've definitely, you know, we've spoken to a few players who played in that era, and Adam Jones said the same thing to us, and he said that he looks back at that era of the Ospreys and said that you should have won more. Is that how you see it?
Oh, definitely. And like, you know, we won, I think during that time we won two league titles and won like an EDF and things like that. But yeah, if you look at the squad, and even now we look back and you think, gee, but you know, it's an international team. And we got so close. We didn't really get close to winning Europe. We got knocked out of two quarterfinals. Like I say, the Biarritz game was the closest we did get, but yeah, should have gone on, and for various reasons, that we played really well that game against Biarritz, scored some great tries if you look back, and just wasn't the be. I think Demian Trai kicked two drop goals, scruffy drop goals, which on any other day would never have gone over, but somehow they did go over, and yeah, it was Biarritz's day and not ours, unfortunately.
Well, let's lighten the mood just before we ask you the final questions about your kit and captain and everything else. You know, spoken there about, you said that's the kind of the hardest pill to swallow as a player. What about the one moment on the pitch? If you could live one moment on the pitch over and over again, what is the one bit that will live with you forever? The biggest highlight.
The biggest. That's a good question, that, Jed. I think probably 2007 when I beat England in Cardiff, and it wasn't for any trophy. Well, it was to avoid the wooden spoon. Actually, it was the week before we'd lost to Italy. Really disappointing, obviously, with that kick to touch where the referee said we had time for the line out. Obviously blew up, which stopped us getting the win. And then we played England in Cardiff the week after, and we had to beat them to avoid the wooden spoon. And yeah, it was my first game proper start in Six Nations at 10, and just went really well for me. We beat England, obviously, at a full house, and man of the match. So yeah, it was one. Obviously, we've had some good proud moments after that, but that's one that sticks out in my head. And just, I always remember that game, just the fans in the stadium, just, you'd swear we'd won the Grand Slam, the way they were cheering. And I know, Welsh fans are like, when we beat England, they go berserk anyway. So, they just didn't want to move. They didn't want to leave the stadium. We, clapping the fans going round. And I don't think the players wanted to leave the stadium either. It was a great, great moment and a great game.
And I think with my Stato hat on, that's the last time any player in the Six Nations has done has ticked all four boxes with try, conversion, drop goal, penalty. Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, is it the last player? I know there's not many players who've done it, but yeah, you might be right.
Unless someone's done it this year, I it was definitely the case for a long time.
Yeah, so yeah, that's nice as well.
Right then, James, let's finish with the final questions. Which stadium would you like this game to take place at? If this was to be a real game of rugby, where do you think it should take place?
I thought about this and I thought, right, what are all the best stadiums in the world we've played at? I've gone for this. This game is going to be played in the Knoll on a Friday night. Still, it's going to be packed to the rafters. They've brought in some temporary stands, and it's going to be packed to the rafters. And like I say, Friday night, end of lights, crisp. You can smell the burgers and the onions, and you're really close to the players. And I just think it'll make for a great atmosphere.
You've picked a pack that I think would cherish a Friday night at the Knoll. So, and actually, there's a fair few players in the back, so I think would. Perhaps Castagnier might need to put his gloves on.
You might not like the Knoll, Castagnier, come think about it. But
that's it, mate. We'll have you on the bench just in case. A great choice. And what about Kit? What jersey do you think this side should wear?
So I've gone for my old junior club, Aberavon Quinn. So the traditional black and red hoops.
Black and red hoops, great shirt. Yeah. Classic kind of rugby jersey, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So it's my old team, Aberavon Quinn. So I'd like to see Lomu in one of those.
Well, that's great. We'll make sure that we put the artwork in that colour for this episode. So it'll be the black and red hoops.
Brilliant.
And then you also get to choose the opposition. Who would you like to see this team go out and beat?
I again thought long and hard about this, but I've gone for the All Blacks. I'd like to see them beat the All Blacks, and I'd also like to see the Hacker before the game. And remember when Munster played against, I think it was New Zealand Maori, and you had Doug Howler playing for Munster and doing the Hacker against. So I'd like to see Lomu and the All Blacks in my team doing the Hacker against the actual All Blacks in the Knoll, just to really get the crowd going before the game,
Oh, what a great choice. Love the thought of that. And yeah. Mate, it's going to be rocking down there. And then, yeah, the last question is who would skipper the side? So you've got some good, some great leaders in there. You've got Van der Vestezen, you've got Khaleesi, you've got Paul O'Connell. Who gets the armband for this game?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't think about this, but I'm looking at the team now, and I think I'm just going to give it a shout, Brits, and say, go on, boy. Just give it a go and see what you got.
Love it. Fantastic. Great choice.
I did actually pick a coach as well. I don't know if...
Yeah, do it.
I thought there's so many quality players in this. I thought, you know, it was a bit of fun. So I thought I'd like to see Jurgen Klopp coach his team. I thought, I can just picture Klopp walking up the touchline of the Knoll, just telling Lormu to pull his wits a little bit, you know?
Do you know what? I can see Klopp having a great bit of banter with the Neath locals as well. Do you know what? I think he'd give as good as he gets.
Yeah, I think so. Because I looked at the team, I thought that this team doesn't really need a coach, just needs someone who's positive with a good atmosphere, you know, brings a good atmosphere to the squad. And I just can imagine, you know, Klopp and Lormu and Contepomi, these boys in Wetherspoons after having a pint with all the Neath fans. So,
mate, I absolutely love that. That's the absolute perfect place to finish. All these boys in Jurgen Klopp getting on the Jaeger bombs in Wetherspoons in Neath.
I'd buy a ticket for it anyway.
So would I. James Hook, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on the Attacking Scrum.
No worries, Jed. No problem, mate. Good to speak to you.
Podcast Network.